Welcome to the Bonneville Up to Speed podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Oste, and this is a podcast covering all things land speed racing on every level, from vintage small displacement motorcycles to cutting-edge streamliners and everything in between, well, I guess, and beyond. And today, we're honored to have a very special guest from Maxwell Industries, Mr. Steve Watt. Welcome.
Thank you for having me, Kevin.
Oh, you're very welcome, man. You're a guy who's been involved in racing for a long, long, long time.
Yes, I have, since I was about 5.
Wow, longer than what your website bio says. It says 14.
Yeah, well, my dad used to take us to the racetrack in the station wagon, all the trailer park kids, when we were 5 years old.
Nice.
Loaded us up, took us to the track.
And where'd you grow up?
San Jose, California.
Oh, so you've been in Cali your whole life.
Yeah, right across the street from the San Jose Fairgrounds.
Back in those days, what kind of racing did he take you to go see?
It was super modified. There was a pavement track out by the airport, Reed Hillview Airport, and one of the couple of few guys that worked for my dad raced. So he would take us out, and we'd all watch, and because we knew who they were. You know, one of them was his foreman, and you know, a lot of guys that worked there, and we just would go down to his shop on the weekends and help him work on their cars, me and my brother, and it just was, we were hooked since we were kids. So,
yeah, that's super cool. And I think that's one of the things that that really helps people get interested and involved is, you know, when they, like they say, they hook you at an early age, especially when it's a situation where you had hands on that race car at that age.
Yeah, well, my dad immigrated from England in 1961, and he was a tool and die maker by trade.
Mm.
So everything me and my brother had grown up doing was dead level, perfect, straight, you know.
Nice.
You know, other than perfect wasn't an option.
Huh. Well, that's a tremendous set of values to instill in a kid.
Yeah. Sometimes we liked it, sometimes we didn't.
I know. It's frustrating. It's hard to maintain that standard, you know, even today. But it's a good thing to keep that in mind. I mean, how many times do you get something in the shop that somebody cobbled together and you're like, really? Wow.
Well, we're going through that. We go through that all the time when we start projects. You start something and you never know who started it, or you get a clean sheet and it's like, man, the first 2 or 3 weeks of the project, it's so important to have the finish end up where you want it.
When did you actually start kind of competing yourself?
Well, I was a crew chief for like probably through high school. We did some micro sprint stuff and midget stuff, and then we got into sprint cars, and I always had this passion. One of my first jobs was at a fiberglass shop. One of my best friends, John Silverbauer Jr., his father owned a company called Grand Prix Plastics, and he built all the gas tanks and seats for all the flat track bikes.
Oh, wow.
So, Brailsford, Lawwell, all the guys, Roberts, all coming up through the Honda deal, the Jerry Knight deal, all that, and I had worked for him all through high school, and I really had a passion for the bikes, but all of our friends went sprint car racing, so that's kind of the path we took. 45 years later, I own flat track bikes.
it all finally came around.
Yeah,
that's cool. So between two wheel and four wheel, and growing up with a father who was a super precision tool and die maker, at some point you picked up the skills to build this stuff on your own.
Yes, we learned. I mean, I can't count the amount of people growing up that helped me. And I worked for Gary Dillard was one of them.
Mm.
Man, Ron, when I moved to Ventura, Ron Butler and Kenny Dutweiler were two guys I worked for. I worked from 7 till 4 for Butler, and I worked from 5 to 9 for Dutweiler. Five
wow.
or 6 years when I moved to Ventura in like 95 or something.
That's cool. I mean, and just to have the opportunity to work with and or for those guys is totally worth the time effort.
Yeah, it's priceless, actually.
When did you open Maxwell Industries?
1999.
Okay.
I started Maxwell Industries as a company that manufactured shock dynos. And I was driving down the highway with one of my buddies. He said, what are you going to call this business for manufacturing shock dynos? I don't know. What do you think I should do? He said, well, don't call it your name because everybody's going to want one for nothing.
Uh-huh.
He says, what's your middle name? I said, Maxwell. He said, well, call it Maxwell Industries. They won't know who it is. So that's in lies where Maxwell started, and it was a few years before they actually figured it out. But now everybody knows who I am. With the, it's all, there's no secrets anymore. Everybody knows what's going on. So.
Sure, but they're already figuring out that that's legit biz, and
yes,
it's its own thing, and that's a whole nother story. Which we'll get into a little bit also, but. So what I wanted to do is kind of establish a little bit of the context and fast forward us to today. Obviously, you are very involved with the Speed Demon Streamliner program, but that's not it. There's still a lot of other forms of racing and fabrication that you guys do over there.
Yes, we just finished a car for John Raines. He's a Bonneville guy, kind of retired, decided he's going to go back and do the Texas Mile and wants to go 300. So he bought a 2020 Mustang and a Pro Mod motor from Delta Pilot and dropped it off at the shop. He said, okay, we need to go race and we need to get this finished up and headers, intercoolers, all that. And it's just going to the wheel dyno now with that. And that was the last year project. The one before that, Irv Kinemoto and Eddie Lawson are putting together a Land Speed Streamliner motorcycle. It started in England, and Irv had called me a couple years ago, and it was going really slow, and he asked if I would consider finishing it for him. And growing up in San Jose in the motorcycle world, you knew who Irv Kinemoto was. And when he called me and said he was a big fan of mine, I'm like, hold the fort here, pal. I know who you are.
Right.
So we talked for a while, and he figured out that I grew up there and knew all the same people and all, you know, everybody. We all grew up in the same sandbox. So that's been quite enjoyable. And just today we started a it's one of Seth Hammond's, the last Lakester that he built. We're going to duplicate for David Pilgrim, twin turbocharged Duramax diesel.
Oh, right on. And, of course, a Lakester being, you know, an open-wheeled car, if you will, for the salt. So there's a lot going on there. And one of the things that that I find fascinating is the rule book for the SCTA and even just the class breakdown is kind of mind-boggling. I mean, there's so many different combinations and different classes you can fall into, and yet you've got a huge amount of creativity in how you put this car together. So, I mean, and there is no off-the-shelf manual on how to build a land speed car. So how do you start one?
Well, that's a great question, because we just went through that today, as a matter of
fact. Hey, timely, right?
We built our car. It was a flat-bottom car. So it was easier to start with a flat bottom, and you build up, you have center line. This new one we're building is rounded all the way around. So it, you have to build it suspended in air. There's no flat plate to start with.
Sure. Wow.
So we have these wooden bucks made that we can build the car inside of, and we got some of them today, and we're not sure that that's going to work. So we sat there for a couple hours, looked at it, me and the guys were thinking, man, we just need to sleep on this a little bit. And I called the guy who did our original Speed Demon stuff for us, Jim Naylor, which is the promoter for Ventura Raceway. Good friend of mine, been racing at his track since I've lived here since the 90s. He has a CNC wood router, very creative. His trophies at Turkey Night are phenomenal. They want to win the trophy more than the racing.
Mm-hmm.
So he's a craftsman in his own right. So he's coming over tomorrow, and we're going to decide what's the best way to attack this program, because there's not one person that's going to make or break a program. You have to assemble all the right people with all the right knowledge to get something to that level of finish.
Yeah, absolutely. So the car exists already, or are you starting from scratch?
No, it's straight tubing and a flat plate on the table on the floor right now.
Wow, right on. What are some of the dimensions of this thing?
It's about 28 and a half feet long, I think. Okay. It's about the size of the Speed Demon.
Yeah.
So you can imagine in the shop now, there's a Speed Demon, there's the Lakes are being built, and Kinemoto's motorcycle 30 feet long. Well, I'm running out of room real quick.
Well, yeah, and you've got a really special one hanging from the ceiling.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we found that. A friend of mine, Jimbo, called me on the phone and said, hey, my dad's seen this thing on eBay, and it's Craig Breedlove, a model of a 17-foot-long model of that blue car that a school teacher did in Fremont, and displayed it with his students and had displays they took around and showed. And the guy, it must have got in the way. It was too big, and finally they started trying to sell it, and I ended up buying it for $850.
That is too cool. And that's the Spirit of America car, right?
Yes. And I thought I was going to hang it off the wall, but it was so darn big we had to hang it upside down from the roof.
Well, I remember that car as a kid thinking not knowing any better, thinking that it was just an airplane with no wings. So it really, it kind of works hanging on the ceiling. I get that.
Yeah, and they, you know, I'm pretty good friends with Craig, and I talked to him. I was back at Speedway doing some documentation for this Lakester that Seth had donated to Speedway Museum. So Clay and the guys there, John, let us come back and take the body off and do some documentation of the car so that we at least had some starting points to build the new Lakester.
Cool.
In the conversation, we went to dinner with Clay Smith every night and John, and the all the conversation turned around. It's like, so whatever happened to that blue car? I said, well, I know it's sitting up in Northern California in Craig's shop and all in pieces, because when he got it back, he called me and said, hey, I need you to give me a quote to restore this thing. So we put a quote together for the museum, because they chopped it up into three pieces, put it up in the museum, chopped it up in three pieces, and gave it back to them. So this thing's a little bit shorter than it started, and it's all in pieces, and it wasn't taken care of, and it's a mess, really. But I'm hoping before I'm done with all this thing, I get a chance to restore that car for Craig.
And that's the actual car?
The actual car, yep. The wheels, everything's there.
And that's the one that's famously depicted in Hot Rod Magazine with the tail sticking out of the pond, basically, right?
Exactly. Yep. It's, I've took pictures of a whole car. The only thing missing is a seat and a motor.
What was in that for a motor?
It was some jet. I'm not sure what year vintage jet it was, but it was a pretty good-sized jet motor.
Man, how cool would that be to restore that car?
Yeah, it's something that I know I think the museum would like to have there at Speedway.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, yeah.
Find it.
And interestingly, jet cars wouldn't be legal today in the SCTA, I don't think, are they?
I don't think so. I think you have to kind of do a private thing with them now.
Yeah, exhibition kind of deal. All right, so getting back to your this project that you're starting, I'm envisioning, you know, basically a cigar on wheels. And are you guys making absolutely everything for this car, or is there stuff you can, you know?
Well, it'll have a B&J rear end.
Okay.
It'll have a Liberty 6-speed. I just got a tracking notice for that today. It's on its way. It'll be one of David Pilgrim's own. I think they do their own motors in house there. Mm-hmm. In Texas, and I think it'll be one of his power plants, because he's got a truck that has a twin turbo charged Duramax in it now that he runs it. It's all beautiful black truck. So most of the stuff will be very similar to what Seth had built, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago when he built it.
Okay.
And Seth, I was with him this morning, and he's excited. His son is, you know, all the original guys that were there kind of are like, whatever you need, just let us know. So hopefully that makes it a lot easier on us as we're moving forward, trying to figure out what they use and try to make it as close to that as we can.
Sure. And I guess the suspension is pretty much, you know, sourced from teardrop-shaped stock and...
Well, we'll probably do more like the axles. Like what was in the front of that thing was a sprint car axle, like a 34-inch centerline sprint car axle. And he had some wedge things on the front of it, and he had some baby moons on the inside that blocked the air. And it was pretty clever how they did it.
Huh.
The rear is really, the tires are really close to the body, but we'll probably do a rocker system like we did on the Speed Demon to get the suspension out of the, because it's so narrow in the back, it's hard to fit the shocks and the four-link plates and everything next to the pumpkin. It gets so cluttered there, it's almost easier to put a rocker on the top.
Okay. Underneath the skin, you're going to have to do a little reinventing of the wheel to make all this work.
And the skin is very limiting.
Yeah.
It is what it is. It's going to be a carbon fiber body, and I have to just live within the means of the carbon fiber. So we're trying to get that as close as possible right now.
Wow. So what is something like this going to weigh when it's done? Is there a target?
My target's probably around, depending on how heavy the motor is, probably 4,000. Like, yeah. Our car ended up being 4,130 ready to roll.
Yeah.
And old Speed Demon was 5,820 was
wow.
The old. And it's still, you know, you have to remember when you're at Bonneville, it's still a drag race. You have a limited length of course. And to accelerate something from point A to point B is still acceleration.
Yep.
And if you can maneuver some traction control, downforce, you know, maybe adjustable canards and stuff like that to let it accelerate, you could trim it out down the road. You know, it's probably going to be the future, how Bonneville goes faster is active, airport.
Sure. Yeah. Interesting. Well, I think that's one of the things that a lot of people don't understand. And for me, I've been a fan of the Salt, like everybody, reading about it in the magazines and whatnot. And I never had the luxury. I didn't grow up in Southern Cal or anywhere close enough to be part of it. And I finally started attending the races, later on. And if you come from a drag race background or even a sprint car background or whatever, the goal is to make those things as light as possible.
Yeah.
And you need weight on the Salt. And a lot of people don't get that.
Yeah, there's got to be some sort of weight, unless you have 100% control of your aero from 0 to mile 5, because it would have to be active, and what we have is we know our downforce as we go from 300 to 400 to 450 to 470. We know we're in pretty safe waters at that speed with the car we have without any active downforce engine. So we just try to manipulate the acceleration as much as we can. And when we get to about the 3 mile, we can usually let it rip and it'll come 1 to 1.
Nice. So in that respect, when you say it's safe, it's literally safe. The aerodynamic package is happy going through the air, and it's not jumping up and down or doing anything unexpected or uncontrolled.
Yeah, that car's not going to blow over.
Yes.
Not in a million years. And it probably hinders us a little bit, but I'm not going to be the one to sit there and try to trim that thing out and have something happen.
Right.
That's something, it's not worth that much. It would be nice to go faster, but man, there's a price that nobody wants to go across that line.
Well, for sure. Yeah. So, let's switch gears a little bit and talk about the Speed Demon program. And this, obviously it's an amazing car. It's an amazing crew. It's got, some resources behind it, and it gets a lot of press, which is great. Part of my mission on doing this podcast, though, is not necessarily only to spotlight, the big hero cars, but that car's a hero car for a reason. it's done a lot of things, and it's really an unbelievable piece of technology and racing equipment. So how did you end up getting involved with George Poteet and his race program?
Well, I started doing headers for Duttweiler when I moved, because once I moved to Ventura, everybody said, oh, there's a header builder in town. So right away, Butler came over, Duttweiler came over for his car. So I did all the stuff on his red Grand National, one he drove. Did all of his fab work. So Chris Raske and I from ARP, before he worked for ARP, he worked for Duttweiler.
Mm-hmm.
So when I got there, him and Chris and I became super good friends, because we'd stay there till midnight, building headers, building intercoolers. He's a good fabricator himself.
Mm-hmm.
So as we moved forward and Ron went from the flat fire program with the flat fire team that they had, it went to an Echo Fire, which was an Echo team, which was a turbocharged four cylinder, which Duttweiler got involved with. And then all of a sudden I got involved doing the headers, and Ron asked us a few years to go, and finally my wife and I decided to go in 2006. And that was the year that George drove the Echo Fire for the first time. We got a record, got a FI world record, did really well. And then the next year, Ron had asked me what I thought of the Salt. I said, man, it's really boring. I really don't want to go back unless I got something I can do. So on April, he drops this car off with a body and engines and all these Mopar. It was a Hemi Mopar, a W9 Mopar, different intakes, different oil pans, different everything. I had probably 10 guys on it of our crew just getting to where we can get the Salt and run. And we run the four cylinder, and I think we got it up to like 390.
Wow.
And we set some records with that thing. We beat the Bar Honda record they had, that normally aspirated record that they had. We got that, and it's like, Duttweiler is like, we probably ought to try something V8. So we put a small block Chevy in it. Like, I think we started with the 300, and heckin', we were going close to 400, like within the, I want to say 2010, 2009.
Oh, man.
So then as the crew guys that started were a little older and the technology was gaining more and everything was happening so fast that, like, I was always looking for that next guy that I knew was super, super good. And like the Kohlsback brothers, Danny Drynan, Shane T, G, the wiring guy, we got hooked up with them guys, and G's been the wiring guy from day one on that car. And he's wired that car since it was Echofly. And he's still on the crew today. He comes to the saw every time we burn the wires off, G fixes it for it. And it happens regularly, so he's got his program. Like this year, we had a really big fire and did very little damage. So we finally get a handle on some of that. But, I mean, the expertise that all the guys that I know on the team, like Carbon Kenny has his own carbon shop. He grew up working for Gurney. His twin brother, he worked for Hendrick.
Wow.
He learned working for Gurney. They all grew up in Huntington Beach.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got all the guys in Huntington Beach are super good fabricators. And they all worked for Remington at one time. Rem was always there. He was always the mentor. And, you know, and Butler learned from Remington. And then I ended up learning from Butler. So there's all these key people that have trickled down that are all pretty darn good people. And, man, there's the guys I got right now, I wouldn't trade for nothing.
No, and I don't blame you. And the evidence is what you guys are able to accomplish. And there was a guy that I worked with in TV a long time ago who had a great line. He said, the good people always work. You know, so those guys have been around a long time, and they're proven that not only is it their abilities, but also how they handle themselves, how they can be on the team and work together to make some big things happen. I mean, that makes all the difference.
Yeah, these guys can do, I mean, like Drynan, he's worked on Andretti's Indy cars. He's got his own fab shop in Indy. He's very clever. He did the whole canopy on the Speed Demon. I called him and said, look, I need you for at least 2 weeks, at least twice. He said, what do I got to do? I said, you're going to have to do my whole interior of the car. He said, okay. So I got there and I said, this is how I wanted to do this. What I wanted to do, here you go. Leave him alone. He'd work from 6 in the morning till 9 at night. He stayed at my house and go to work every day, and he knocked it out. And it's guys like that that I don't even have to question what he's doing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I just know. And I mean, all the guys now, like you're working on the car and they're all engaged in the car with you. So a guy, they see you looking at something and they hand you the wrench that you're going to get to tighten what you're doing.
Yeah, that's
that kind of deal right there. That seals it for me.
Sure, that's fantastic. And that's what it takes, you know.
Yeah.
And the most amazing thing to me about the land speed racing scene is that really the only thing that's in it is the glory and the record, you know. It's not sponsored by Tide or Budweiser or, you know, any big giant corporate things. There's no zillion-dollar television contract or a world tour or any of that stuff. So you're able to pull together, you know, the best at what they do because they want to do it.
Yep. And they take vacation. They do whatever they got to do. And I say, look, I need you for 10 days. And all we got to do is be 10 days worth of work, and we can get this done. And I mean, everybody's at the table at 5:30 in the morning for breakfast. Everybody works. Everybody travels together. Everybody does everything together. And it's just kind of, it's like a small, I mean, half the people, like a lot of the people come from Tennessee that we don't get to see a lot. Like yeah. Eric, Danny, and George, and Betty, and all the people, you know, Herb, that, you know, all these people that come and do the 10-day thing with us. We're there for 10 days, and it's like family. I mean, like, call them on the phone. George was just out here a couple weeks ago. We sat in the office and talked for 2.5 hours about everything but racing.
Sure, yeah.
So it's like, it's just one of them things where he trusts us to do what's right. He doesn't fear one thing when he gets in that car.
Mm.
He knows that there's no way we'd let that car go down there if we thought there was a possibility of anything, you know, failing, because that's just not enough.
No, exactly. And I think it's also important to point out that it's not just you guys. You know, that level of dedication goes all the way down to people that are just getting into this in the very beginning. It's a bunch of guys and gals that contribute their, like you said, their vacation time and, you know, in many cases, you know, damn near every last dollar to put some car together in some guy's garage and truck it out to, you know, El Mirage, or truck it out to Salt and go make a run of it, using every resource that they have, even though they might not be, you know, very much. And it's the dedication is just awe-inspiring.
I mean, and one of the reasons, like, we have a lot of stuff. I mean, ARP sponsors us. Brown & Miller Hose sponsors us. We got a lot of things at our disposal on the salt. welders, material. I mean, and everybody knows, if you need anything, just come and get it. Mm-hmm. All of our sponsors, don't worry about anything. Just give them what they need. Let them get racing. They're there for, you know, it's hard to get there, and you're only there for a little while. Just help them. Like, we have hoses we've switched off our cars for the last 15 years. And we carry, like, two big, huge containers full of hoses. That if they need a hose, we drag the tub out. Say, here you go. Fix it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, because it's like, I'm not going to throw it away because it's still worth something.
For sure.
But it's not going to fit our latest thing because we've changed everything around another time.
Yeah. So now,
but the hoses don't work, but they'll work for somebody else. And we got stocked ARP bolts full of ARP bolts. If you need a bolt, come get a bolt. Not a big deal. It's part of what we do for the salt.
Right.
You know, it's and, you know, there's a lot of people that go there that do a really, really good job that don't get the notoriety they should.
For sure.
There's a lot of people that I know personally that, man, I don't know how the heck they do it. And one of the guys I was talking to this afternoon, Reg Cook, he has to come from New Zealand, and they've been on lockdown, and he's trying to get to get his car done, and he can't get parts, he can't get nothing. I mean, can you imagine? We can't get parts in America, and they're American-made. What about being in New Zealand trying to get parts for America?
No way.
He's in a tough position right now, so I'm going to – he asked me, you know, to give him – see if I could help out with some of the parts you needed, so I'm going to get on the horn and check around, see if we can't line some stuff up. I don't know if we don't have enough stuff at Duttweiler or somebody like that, that's stuff that's obsolete to us, but you don't need to make the horsepower to do what you want to do. So.
Yeah, perfect.
We'll see what happens. You never know.
Yeah, it's that great fellow racer and enthusiast karma, because, you know, at the end of the day, you're not necessarily competing against the guy that's pitted next to you. You're competing against the rule book. You're competing against the salt. You're competing against yourself and your own car. So it's a different deal.
It's, and let me tell you, it is different. I got a chance to drive the last couple years. Wayne Jessel said, hey, you're going to drive my truck. I'm like, okay. So Rasky went through it first, and he was, I think, number 8. And then I was number 10 to get my 200 hat in Wayne's truck.
That is so cool that he affords that opportunity to you guys to do that.
He is like, I couldn't believe it. His operation is not no less than ours by far. The guys, that it's not as big, but what they do, when I got in that truck, I felt like Superman because I knew nothing was going to happen.
Yeah.
I mean, the guys, you know, they belt you in. They tell you what's going to happen. They tell you this. They tell you that. You know, they make you feel totally comfortable. And I'm like, I was a little nervous, but, you know, like George asked me, he said, hey, are you nervous? You're going to go like 240 mile an hour in a pickup truck. Depends on what kind of nervous you call it, George. I said, nervous? Yeah, I'm a little nervous, but I'm not near as nervous as when I sit at the 5 mile waiting for you to come at me at 450.
For sure.
Not knowing what's going to happen. I hold my breath every time.
Yeah, I guess from what I can tell, I've seen that Jessel truck run for several years, and it seems to be pretty figured out.
It's phenomenal. Wayne does such a great job with all the different motor programs and all the different people and all the different things he does. I mean, I can't thank him enough for the opportunity. And I mean, it was phenomenal. It was a pretty, you know, to watch that car go across the salt, you think it's pretty smooth from the pit. But when you're driving it down the salt, that thing's moving all over the place.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a totally different feeling. And you get a little more, you know, George used to tell me that, you know, they need to widen the bags at the end. So what are you talking about, George? You said, when you're down at the end by the 4 and the 5, there, it's sort of like threading a needle.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, really? So then I got out of the truck the very first time I drove it, and I called George and said, hey, I understand what you mean about the bags. Because at 240, it's narrow. It's like threading a needle. If you don't, that was like the first time I've ever really done it.
So sure.
I was used to the speed. So it kind of really affected my vision about the bags getting narrow. Like at 150, it wasn't nothing. Compared to 250, it was a whole different world.
Yeah. Well, and that whole environment is crazy. I mean, you know, we go out there and we rent a car and go to the event. And one of the cars we rented had some kind of a cruise control, you know, radar crash detection system with cameras and whatnot. And it got onto the salt and straight up said, I have no idea where I am. You know, the camera couldn't discern the horizon line. It didn't know anything. And that's basically standing still.
It's Mars.
It is, yeah. It's crazy. And it's cool because today with, you know, everybody being able to strap a high-quality GoPro or other camera in the car, now we're really, you know, the spectators are able to really start to see the effects of that terrain and that it's not glass smooth and you can see things bouncing around and the driver correcting and steering where you were just thinking, this is a straight line. Why do you have to steer anything?
Yeah, that's got to be easy, right?
Yeah, no, right.
Not so much.
And then that tunnel vision comes in and it's a whole new world. So when you were running in Jessel's truck, how many runs did you make with that thing?
I'm not sure. I know it was on it. I was probably one of the fastest paced guys to ever get a 200 hat. We started at World Finals. Chris ran Tuesday, Wednesday, and he got his record on Wednesday. And Wayne said, well, I got another motor. And Chris and his wife, me and my wife, were supposed to go to Park City and hang out for the weekend. So we were going to do that. But then Wayne said, well, I got this normally aspirated, you know, whatever, e-motor or something in the trailer. Let's swap it out. So he swapped it out and says, hey, go get your thing and do a bailout. You're going to run the truck. There's a 193 record that this thing will go 200. So you have to get a license. So I did my first license. I started at 1230. I got my first license, my second license, my third license, and I went 198, and I was an impound at 430.
Oh, man.
On a 198. And the number two piston, I don't think, was, or the number two or number four, wasn't, the piston was hooked to the rod no more.
Yeah, wow.
So we were done.
Yeah.
So he said, okay, I'm not finished with you, you're coming back. So the next season, this year, we went, and we broke on Thursday, and he had, I think Jimmy Blanton, Jason, George's son-in-law, all went 200 or 250. Jason got his red hat. He was number nine. And then Wayne took his turbo motor that got his 200 hat in. It was a D motor. So he took the rocker off, took the lifter, turned it around, took the injector off, took the spark plug out, blocked the spark plug, whatever he did. And said, okay, now it's a 250. It's an E motor now. So it was a V7 E motor. And I went out and went, I didn't want to hurt it. So I went 236 at the three, and I just held it 236 all the way to the five. So then the next, we go to impound. So the record was like 215 or something. So we go to impound. And then Wayne said, hey, look, this is the last time I've ever going to run a turbo motor. Just run this thing as far as it'll go. And I got it. It was 247 at the three, I think, in it. And I had to let off the gas and put the gas on and off because the red light was coming on for the shift light.
Mm.
So I just babied the throttle all the way through to the five, and I think we averaged 45 or 44 or something in E class.
Nice.
So it's got a blown modified pickup E record, I think.
That is too cool.
So it was like I don't know. They asked me how long it took me to get my 200 hat. I said, I don't know, 2 months, 3 months. It was
yeah, from start to
six
finish.
Runs. I mean, with Wayne, it's like he's pretty prepared. He's got a plan. So
he definitely does. And you know, part of that point was that it's not like this was a truck that you built or that you had years of experience behind the wheel. You basically just jumped in and ran it, and were able to not only do it safely but set records.
Yeah.
And that's another thing that. You know, a lot of people don't consider when they think about land speed racing is that you can't really practice for this. You know, it's not like you can take that streamliner and run it up and down the Ventura Freeway and see what it does.
Yeah, no, we go there and like George, I mean, he's pretty seasoned veteran. He like, I can't remember the last time we didn't go and start off on Saturday and go at least 425 right out of the truck.
Yeah.
Because he assumed, like I assume, the fastest we're going to go is the first run. Because the salt's not going to get any better.
True.
So, and there's nothing we're going to do that we haven't already done when we left the shop. There's no tricks we're going to find out because the salt does this or this does this. We're just going to take the best shot we have with all the information we have. And usually we end up pretty good. Sometimes we'll hurt it, but for the most part, we're pretty safe. At 425, because the goal is beyond that. Like, if we can go a couple runs and get a handle on the tune and a handle on everything that's going on. It's only going to, like this year we talked, and I think maybe four runs is all George wants to do at the max.
Oh, really?
Yep.
So this past year, being 21, was a little different because Raschke got behind the wheel.
Yes, he did.
Here's a guy whose land speed career is, you know, condensed like you're talking about from get the red hat, then jumping behind the wheel of the Speed Demon. I mean, wow.
Well, he went, I don't know, he got his unlimited license the first run at Speed Week. We had him go before George in the big box and just go fast enough to get his unlimited license, knowing that we needed to get George through his stuff. And then at the end, we were going to put the 256 and let Chris get the E-record. We've stumbled on the E-record for 3 or 4 years, and we've blown that thing up and haven't even done it. The E-record's 348, and like our knowledge isn't good enough to go 360. This blew up at the 3.5, and still went 390 average through the five.
Oh, man.
Six cylinders.
Wow. Yeah, and that E-class is what, 300 cubes and less? Is that the deal?
Yeah, that one's a 256.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah. So it's pretty cool that at Bonneville you can basically just change engines to advance or change classes, and the rest of the car can kind of stay the same. That's the way it goes.
So the way when we built our car, knowing the problems we had in the past, we built it a lot like a sprint car where it's got two motor plates, and like a Pro Mod car, the transmission slides back.
Okay.
So we could pull the driveline out, slide the tranny back, leave the turbos, leave the intercooler, leave everything where it is, unhook the headers, pull the motor out, put a new motor in, it's all plumbed, oil tanks, everything, slide the transmission in, hook the headers up, put the driveline in, and probably, I want to say we're between an hour and 20 minutes.
Wow, on the changeover? Man.
Yeah.
That is crazy.
There again lies the people around me.
Oh, yeah.
I'm more of a coach anymore. They don't let me work. They're on it. They already have a plan. When we get to the end and we know we're doing a motor change, 90% of the stuff is done before the car gets to the pit.
Yeah, it's a Bonneville pit crew, for crying out loud. It's like a timed stop.
Yep.
Yeah. So this year, we're early in the season, and do you guys only run Speed Demon? You only run that at Bonneville, is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. So first event is a few months off.
Speed Week.
Yeah, so you got till August. And what is the goal for that thing?
Well,
as fast as it can go?
Well, yeah. I mean, we don't know how fast. I mean, we know if we went 5.5 miles, it'd go 500. But we don't know if we're, you know, to get to there, I don't know if it's possible to get there or not. We're trying some different things this year that are not off the map that far, but we think, you know, that all the guys work on other stuff during the year. You know, like Shane T, Deltwar, they're working on other programs, and some of the stuff they learn, it'll trigger their memory about what our problems are. And we'll talk, you know, a few times a year. We're just starting to get to that point now because we finally got all the pieces where we can start putting the car back together right now.
So, mm-hmm.
We'll have a couple of things we'll try on a chassis dyno before we get there, just control systems and stuff like that. And if it can be done, this will be the year we're going to do.
Love to hear that.
Yeah, this will be it.
Well, and you mentioned starting to put the car back together. Now, this car, it comes apart pretty much, and then it comes apart all the way, depending on how much time's on it.
Well, yeah, we every season, all the bearings go through all the bearings, all the bolts come out of it, all the holes get retapped, and because what happens is the salt has like a slush,
yep,
and it's in between the bolts, and even though they're stainless ARP bolts, it corrodes inside the chassis.
Yeah, the hole's not.
We just Joe Galati, we call him Top Fuel. He's the main guy that disassembles and assembles and cleans everything. So if you need a washer, you need a turbo, you need an exhaust pipe, you need anything, everybody ask Joe. Because Joe knows where everything's at.
Mm-hmm.
So he's at the shop probably 3 to 4 days a week, and he works for George, and he, you know, comes to the shop, and he's just like one of the guys. He's there all the time, and his main purpose is to make sure that, everything's in order, because we take three trailers, so there's one whole trailer is nothing but parts and engines. So we'll take another, we'll take four engines again this year. We'll take a double A, the LS, the A motor. We have a 368 motor we haven't run for 4 years, but it's still good to go. Because at one point, if we get everything done we want to get done, that 368 record kind of light. So the B record, we can, I think that's only in the 420s. That should be in the 450, I think. So, and the B and the A record's the same. That's kind of light. So that B motor went 475 with 466 average last year. The record went 423.
Yeah, made that one.
That LS is as fast as the big box.
Oh, I bet. Yeah, from everything I've seen, for sure.
Yeah, it's capable of doing the same thing the big block does.
Yeah. So it's, but then what was it last year? Not only did you disassemble the car, but the whole chassis got media blasted or stripped in some way all the way down to bare steel.
That was before 21.
Oh, before 21. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because we burned it up in 21 and the chassis was about due because it was the first time we redid it since new in 2015.
Okay.
We did that, but we didn't do the body. The body didn't have as much damage, and we kind of spotted it in and kind of got it so we can get back to Bonneville without having to get it redone. And then this year, we completely KO'd the body. It burned from the inside out. It burned from the outside in. It was horrible. So it went back in December to Troy, a bare frame with the body, and Troy had it for a couple months and redid the whole thing and took it all the way down to nothing and just redid the whole thing up. Because every time you fix it, it leaves a little bit just there where the clips and stuff and everything, they kind of bulge out on the paint. But he took everything off, redid it all. It looks better, I think, now than it did when it was brand new.
Huh, that's cool. Yeah, little tiny things are going to affect aero, and who knows? So it's all got to be right. And I'm guessing he kept the same color scheme and design and all the rest,
Just looks, it looks pristine now. I mean, we put it up, took the body off and covered it all up upstairs. It's off limits.
Yeah, don't touch it. That's cool. So then in this case, you're starting to put it all back together. And like you're saying, you're able to do some runs and pulls and stuff on the chassis dyno. But then Speed Week, it's the actual event, and that's the first time you get to run this all put back together.
Yeah, we'll have it all put together with the body off and run it on a chassis dyno. That way we can check our intercooler sensors, all of our sensors for the water in, water out. We could check the fly-by-wire. We want to try that out. You know, we'll all be there, so we'll have everybody there. And we could test and make sure all the systems are working, because we're trying some different oiling systems to suck oil out of the overflow tank, put it back in the dry sump tank.
Oh, okay.
Just different things we've seen over the years that, you know, you get done with a run and you take four quarts out of the overflow tank for the breather system.
Sure. You could use that.
Pump it back into the dry sump tank. So we're just doing different things that aren't normal, but it's what is normal about Bonneville.
Nothing. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, ProMod car's got like a 5 gallon catch tank on it and goes 5 seconds.
Right.
The minute you ask some guys, okay, so what if you ran that for a minute? Boom. And they look at you like, a minute?
Yeah. No way.
Really, a minute.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a little bit different world.
It's a lot different world. Yeah. So you keep mentioning, you know, some of the, for lack of a better term, some of the problems that you've had in the past. And of course there was the fire and, you know, things that prevented the car from doing everything it's supposed to do. What type of, you know, failures, I guess, do you guys have out there? I mean, what lets go that, ruins the day?
Well, last year, the very first run, it was a valve cover gasket that blew out, spit oil over the thing and burned it up.
Yeah.
A simple valve cover gasket. I mean, it was like, we glue them on, we do all the stuff we do, and it's like, well, who was going to know that this crankcase pressure was going to be a little bit higher this year? But then, okay, we ran more boost. You know, we did this, and it's like, okay, well, did we tip over the edge and find a new thing that we needed to work on and fix? And sure enough, it was, because all week long we had breather problems.
Uh-huh.
It couldn't get all the air out of the motor, and then we come to find out we, you know, had switched oil pans a couple years ago, and before that, you know, you think you're going better, and you, you know, the oil pan works great on a road car, you know, drag car stuff, but the minute you run it for that long a time, it can't get oil and the air out of the bottom of the motor.
Mm-hmm.
And the pumps on the stages on the scavenge pumps or the oil pumps need to be bigger. You'll go from an inch and a half to an inch and a quarter to an inch and a half stage on the pump. So you're right at the edge of that pump. So now you're saying, okay, well, wait a minute. Then Kenny's doing a motor, completely different motor on the dyno, and he's got a scavenge on the pump, and it's like running out of oil. So we're thinking, well, what's going on here? Then we come to find out, oh, yeah, you need to run an inch and a half or inch and three quarter scavenge on that pump. And nobody tells you in the beginning, you have to learn it.
Right, yeah.
So we've taken some of that stuff, and we're looking, just going back and looking at everything. And it's better to have too much than not enough.
Well, that's for sure. But I think a lot of people, it's hard to identify with that type of car to a regular, you know, hot rodder, because everything, it's so exotic, the shape, the electronics, the power levels. But it's almost good to hear you guys have regular car guy problems, like a leaky valve cover gasket.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, the thing's so hot, the headers are glowing red, and it doesn't take anything flammable to hit them, and it's on fire.
Boom.
And
yeah.
If you look at the fire through the camera, we have a camera in there, and there's air going through there. So it's not a fire. It's a flamethrower.
So yeah.
It burns anything in its way. And we have three different fire systems. Two shoot water. They have static canisters that are like computer room fire, so it can put out all the fire, but it doesn't hurt all your electronics.
Uh-huh.
We have three of them cans, and each can's worth, it's big enough to put out a 500-square-foot building. So we have plenty of fire retardant. It's just knowing when to turn it on, and you can't have a automatic one because the fires never start in the same place.
Yes. Yeah.
So you can't have like a burnable wire that will burn off and set the fire extinguisher on fire, because one fire is on the floor, one fire is on the left side, one fire is on the right side, one fire is on the very top.
Sure.
It just didn't seem to make any sense. So
yeah, and there's only so much room under the skin to put all this stuff.
Yeah, we did make the mistake one time of making the camera go to the dash once the car got rolling, and it caught fire about the 3 mile. George tried to get out of that thing at about 250.
Yeah, no, I remember hearing that story. So he sees the fire and says, uh-oh, I'm watching the fires behind me, but it's on the screen. And him, I don't know how fast he went in that particular run, but he's used to going really fast in that car.
Yeah.
So I'm going to guess that 100 miles an hour feels like you're not even moving.
Yeah, the canopy was open at 2-something.
So he pops the canopy at 2-something.
So that was a one and done.
I can imagine, yeah.
The only thing I want to do now is I'd like to do some stuff. The legality at Bonneville rules doesn't really let us do it. And I'm not sure about our electronics with the way we run our electronics, but we can always see the camera after the fact. We go back to the pitch, Jimbo downloads everything, and we watch the fire and the thing. I said, Jimbo, what if we watched the fire? What if you sat at the 5 mile with a computer, and when the fire started, you just hit the fire extinguisher to turn it off?
Ah.
But the rules won't allow you to have active communication with the car.
Really? So I wonder what that, if you really niche that definition out.
I've asked it a few times and got shut down. And just, it's something that needs to happen in the future, but I'm not sure we have the technology or what to do it yet. Or we haven't talked to the right person, maybe, but it's something that I've thought would have saved us a lot of runs and a lot of. And as guys are going to, everybody's going to run as soon as people start running up like we're running and doing what we're doing. It's not a secret what we do. We'll tell you what we're doing. It's not that big a deal, but it's just a lot of work and a lot of time and a lot of money.
Well, so, yeah.
I mean, there's guys that want to do it, and the thing is the whole thing, when you go that fast, safety is the number one concern we have when we get up in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, yeah, going fast comes into play, but man, we got to make sure we don't have fires. We got to make sure that the tires, because we get started having some tire issues where we're smoking the tires off and it's shredding them, but we've never ever lost a tire from the start. We've never had a flat tire.
That's awesome.
But lately I've been changing them every run. So
well,
now, lately we've got a handle on what was causing that. So now we're back to not having to need so many tires.
Yeah, and again, this is not something you run down to your local, you know, tire store and get a new set of skins for that thing.
No, as a matter of fact, Goodyear just bought out Mickey Thompson.
I heard about that.
Yeah, so I bought every Mickey Thompson they had.
So hopefully Goodyear appreciates the value in land speed racing.
Well, they do. I've talked to them, and they have a 300-mile-an-hour tire that's supposed to be really, really good.
Yeah.
But I'm one of them guys that we've been running this tire as long as George has been running that car, and I'd rather have more of those tires so George could finish running as long as George is going to run.
Yeah.
We could always test them. Chris can test them down the road or whatever we're doing down the road with different programs. We're looking at a diesel program. We're looking at an electric program.
Wow, cool.
To do the Speed Demon. So I've got people that want to do some other things. So I don't think we're going to be done running the car. It's just when George finishes, we're going to look at doing different things with different companies and trying to maybe, well, George can finally retire and not have to, you know, put so much of the bill.
Right, yeah, and to climb in and out of the damn thing.
Yeah, and it's harder and harder for him to get in and out of, and I just want him to get what he needs to get, and we good with that.
Well, and he's been so great for the sport, and not just land speed racing, but the automotive enthusiast side with you know, show cars and events and the racing as well, because when he gets into it, he gets all the way into it.
He's in.
And
I
guess.
Go ahead.
He's always there to help other people, like you're saying. You're always welcome to ask questions, and you know, his guys and him will lend a hand wherever they can. And he's one of the few people, if I'm not mistaken, that as an individual is a sponsor of the SCTA events.
Oh yeah, huge sponsor.
Yeah. So you know,
we all kind of do it. Like, we built him a trailer, Chris and I, ARP and Maxwell, pitched in and did that trailer, the announcer's trailer last year.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. That's cool.
And just stuff that we are, you know, for us, it's not that big a deal. I mean, take us a couple weekends, you know, all the guys around the shop, it's not that big a deal for us to do something. You know, for somebody to try to go find somebody to fabricate it and build it and do this and do that, I mean, it's going to cost them a fortune. So we just decided we'll just do it. So, and George, every year he has, you know, we have anybody who volunteers, George is always there to volunteer our crew to do whatever and, you know, help out if you need to move cones or whatever. I mean, he's just, I tell you, without him, I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you right now.
Yeah, no, that's...
He's opened a huge door for me, you know, just as personally and professionally of things I've learned, and just being around him, his demeanor and how he treats people and what you do for people, even though you don't have to.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It changes all of us. I mean,
yeah, it really rubs off, and especially when it's a guy like him that has the built-in credibility of, you know, being able to do basically whatever he wants, you know?
Yeah.
I have a really great, quick George Poteet story, and this goes back to 1999, and I was working for Hot Rod Magazine TV on the Hot Rod Power Tour. I guess it was 2000. And at the time it was my girlfriend, Kelly, who, you know, who's now my wife. She's on the tour, with me. She was a legal, secretary at the time, and she took her vacation to do the power tour with me. And George was on tour with Trepaniers, and, we're all sitting around in, I think it was Elk City, Oklahoma, and we're having pizzas, and it's, some of the guys from Hot Rod and George and, Jack and Judy Trepanier. And I think, Hal Bear and Todd Garchor from Bear Brakes, and we're all sitting there BSing, and Kelly says, well, I'm tired, I'm gonna go to bed. So she gets up and goes to the room, and I'm sitting there, and George leans over and he goes, if you don't put a ring on her finger, I'm gonna I said, oh boy. It's a good motivator there, Mr. Oh, yeah. Poteet. Well, too cool. So, you know, you mentioned the volunteer spirit also of this this sport. That's one of the reasons why, you know, I'm drawn to it, and I want to help promote the events and promote the sport as much as possible, because it can be anything you want it to be. If you're into high-tech stuff, you're not going to find higher tech than is running out on the salt. If you're into traditional, you know, gasoline, small engine, vintage motorcycles, they're out there too. And if you like stuff that's not even powered by, you know, a combustion engine, that's out there too, and electric and anything you want. And it's an opportunity to really do something special without all the hassle of the rest of the world. So it's a great group of people, and it's friends that friends you just haven't met yet, you know, is the way I look
at it. Exactly. Yeah. It's a different sport. We had some guys go there this year that had never been there before and had no idea about the they were more impressed with the people than anything else. It's like everybody we talked to was so happy. They invited us in. They fed us. They did everything. It's like,
yeah,
like you go to any pit, like, and that's how they are. I mean, it's, there's not like you got to be secret from the guy next door. You know, it's not like a sprint car race where you don't want this guy to know this or this guy to know this. Or, you know, it's not that competitive. The competitiveness comes within, I think, not having to race against five or six different guys, you know?
Right. Yeah, totally. And if you're not careful, they're going to ask you to pick up a wrench and help put the car back together. You know? So that's another
thing. Yeah, we've done a few overhauls in other people's cars and we had some downtime.
Yeah, that's cool. All right, Steve. Well, we're going to wrap this up, but if somebody wants to see more of Maxwell Industries, where can they go?
MaxwellIndustries.com.
And maybe next time we have you on, we'll get into the Shock Dyno story all the rest of the stuff.
Yeah, and SpeedDemon715.com has most all the videos and all the stuff, and their Instagram and Maxwell Instagram and stuff like that. There's plenty of stuff out there to be seen.
Yes, for sure. Very cool. Well, listen, man, I always appreciate the time. Thanks for joining.
Hi, Kevin.
Bonneville Up to Speed is a podcast produced with the blessing of the Southern California Timing Association, and it's available on all major podcast platforms. Subscribe if you're into land speed racing, and be sure to visit scta-bni.org for all the latest news and the calendar of SCTA racing events at El Mirage and the Bonneville Salt Flats. Thanks for tuning in, and for Steve Watt, I'm Kevin Oste, and now you are up to speed.